All right, the year was 1986. I've always wanted to start a message that way. It's just so dramatic to start a message that way. But the year truly was 1986. I was driving up La Vista Road. I'll never forget it. Headed toward what would, at that point was a thriving North Lake Mall, okay? Was headed up that way. Was going to go to dinner with the girl I was dating at the time. And just to get a little bit, so you're dialed in, a little bit of a mood board for 1986. This is the mood board for 1986 for me, okay? Probably didn't rock the full Run DMC full kit, but definitely Adidas pants for PE, definitely Adidas jacket for date night, okay? That's the way that goes down. I drove a white Volkswagen, what was called a Rabbit. It was a diesel car, and it had absolutely no power, especially if the air conditioning was on, okay? Volkswagen Rabbit. Probably listening to REO Speedwagon, which was ironic considering there was no speed in that wagon for me. But REO Speedwagon, if you're young, you don't know REO Speedwagon, check it out. Probably we were headed to Chili's, which is no longer there, just over the over 285, likely to eat what was called an Awesome Blossom, which is basically an onion that's just deep fried with sauce, and it's part of the reason arteries aren't working great for today. And that's my senior picture, by the way, hair parted in the middle, because that's the way we all did it, okay? So that's the mood board. This is what we're rocking, okay? Headed up La Vista Road with the girl I'm dating, and I'm just driving, REO Speedwagon, can't fight this feeling. Things are going well, right? And tell me if this has ever happened to you. She turns to me and she says, "What is this that we're doing?" Which, as a 18-year-old male, I answered that question. I said, "We're driving to Chili's to get Awesome Blossom and listen to REO Speedwagon. Is this a trick question?" And lo and behold, it was, because she's asked me the question again. "What is this what they're doing?" And the ambush is reported. "What is this that we're doing? What is this that we're doing?" Right? And so suddenly I realized it wasn't a question of where we're going and what we're eating. I suddenly realized I was in what was called a DTR, right? If you know what DTR means, DTR is the define the relationship conversation. She wanted to know, what is this relationship that we're doing? What is this thing that we're doing, right? So feel free to do this with somebody in your world this week. It freaks people out, especially if you're a male. I was well into my 30s. My wife might still ask me this, and I'm terrified, you know. What is this that we're doing? But I was into a DTR, right? And so I think, you know, define the relationship conversations are really important. They really are. They're really helpful, I think, especially in dating and whatever, who with humans in your life. But I think define the relationship. DTRs are important in any relationship you have. And I don't think that excludes the relationship that you have with the church or the relationship you have with this body of people or Decatur City Church. I think define the relationships are important because people attend church, if you didn't already realize this, and this may or may not be you, people attend church for a variety of reasons, okay? Some not so good, some good, okay? For example, some not so good reasons that people might have a relationship with a church or attend church might be this. One of those is for credit. You know, you grew up in a world where you felt like, I got to go to church because I got to get my check mark, and I got to get my check mark because if I don't get my check mark, God's going to be mad or sad about it. So a lot of people go to church because of credit. Some people for guilt. That's probably even worse, is that, you know, if you don't go to church, you're like, the Lord's disappointed in you today. And so you've gotten in a pattern. The relationship really is, my relationship as I go to church, because of guilt, right? There's other people that just out of habit, you're like, I don't know. It's just what we've always done ever since I was a little kid. You go to church. Sunday mornings are for church, and that's what you do, right? Or, you know, you might even be in that situation where you're like, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's habit. Maybe I'm not really sure why I go. And that's fine because something draws you there. But those are not so good reasons. But then again, the room is full of people that go for better reasons. And you know, if I were to have the DTR with you, like, why do you come here? You would have an answer for me. It might be, I come here to find community. I find people there. I find people that share a faith journey. And then this is where I find friendships. I come there to worship and to learn. That's a good thing. I come here to be inspired. You know, the week wears me down and Sundays really fuel me back up. And I come because part of the relationship with the church is that, in my relationship with God through the church, is that I get inspired. Some of you would say, hey, this is also an outlet for me to serve the next generation, serve in some area around here in the church, help serve our city, help serve our community partners. Some people are like, hey, my relationship is that I'm here to grow in faith. And so there's a wide range of motive why people come to church. It's a wide range of motive why people attend this church. And I hear about it generally from people. in kind of some unique conversations, usually happening at parties. Okay, this is the way it goes down for me. If you let you a little bit in on my world, is that when I'm at a party dinner party, whatever, and especially around people that I don't know. My wife was in the cable industry for 29 years, and I would end up at industry things with her, and so I'm just a walking time bomb in terms of conversation for people, and I'll tell you why. Is that you meet people, and then the first thing that typically people ask is, what do you do for a living, right? Okay? And so I'm standing around with a bunch of people I don't know, and they're like, hey, what do you do for a living? And I was like, oh, I'm a pastor. And so anytime you tell somebody a pastor, a couple of things happen, just as a little FYI PSA. First thing is this, the conversation immediately dies. Right? You tell people you're a pastor, immediately people start doing weird things. They start extinguishing things and like, oh, sorry. You know, they're putting drinks down and like, a few minutes ago I said, a word and I shouldn't have said that in front of you. So anyway, there's a whole confessional thing that happens with people. So conversation immediately dies, right? So the second thing that happens though, when you're a pastor, and feel free, if you ever want to get out of a conversation, just tell people you're a pastor, even if you're not one. I bless you all to do so. Especially you introverts in the room, it's a helpful tool, okay? The other thing that happens too, and this is actually a little bit more insightful and a little more unique, is that people tend to confess their spiritual allegiance to me. And what I mean by this is a lot of times people are like, oh, I'm a pastor. And they're like, oh, let me tell you about our church home. Or we're Presbyterian. They usually just come right out. And this may happen in other people's industries. If you're a chiropractor, they're like, oh no, I have chiropractic help already. We don't need whatever it is that you're selling. I feel like that's a little bit of it. They're like, here's, I'm going to give you a preemptive strike to tell you what we already do, so don't sell me on your church or your faith or whatever else. But it's interesting as people tell you, because now people, those that either have a faith or attend a church somewhere, typically go into, kind of their litany of the things that they either like or they don't like. And there's a word, a little phrase in there that I use a lot of times that this always catches my ear. And I'll say, hey, I'm a pastor. And they're like, oh, sorry. They'll extinguish things. They're like, oh, we already have a church home. Or let me tell you about our church home, which is an interesting phrase, right? It's an interesting phrase. And they go on to tell me what they like or they don't like about their church home, if you will. And which is great. I always love people when they're involved in churches and where they go. But it's interesting for me to hear. And it's interesting for me to kind of listen to them process a little bit. And I'm a little bit conflicted with the term, actually. And I'm conflicted with the term because honestly, the good out of this term is that it has the word home in it. And if you think about your home, the major agenda for most people's home is to be comfortable, right? Nobody sets up a home to not be comfortable. You've set up your home, I've set up my home to be comfortable and to be a place of ease and a place of rest and a place to come. And I love all that about what's embedded in this term, right? And actually, we work really hard at Decatur City for you to have this as a place that's comfortable and for you to find, an easy place for you to come and to get plugged in. But home is a place we set up for our own comfort. That's really the primary agenda. But the bigger question, and this is kind of where it gets tricky, is that when the church's primary trait, any church, our church, anybody else's church, when the church's primary trait is to be comfortable, things can get weird, right? When everybody comes to the door and like, as we DTR, I'm here so that I can be comfortable. That gets weird. When everyone's primary agenda or everyone's primary initiative or value here is comfort, the church can become a couple of things. It can become inwardly focused. We've talked about this a lot around here. The church can be inwardly focused. It can be a place that turns out to be self-serving. Inwardly focused means is that everybody kind of turns inward and everybody wants to kind of set it up their way. And I want the music this way, the music's this loud or that loud or more music, less music. This is where we sit. I like that window. I didn't like this. And that's fine. I do the same thing, okay? But it can be self-seeking. It can be about what you most want. We can be really intolerant of change if comfort is the highest value here. And if you follow Jesus for very long, you realize that, wow, Jesus is going to call you out into challenge, because in the same way it is with life, this is where we grow. But to be a place of like seeking comfort means, hey, I'm not interesting for challenge, because challenge is innately uncomfortable. But also the church can be a place that becomes really exclusive, especially if there's a majority that says, this is what we feel like is most comfortable for us at a church. We're not gonna worry about anybody that doesn't agree with us or anybody that's wired differently for us or anybody that wants something different from us. And some of us grew up in that, right? We could tell stories. Some of you, that was your church, that was your faith and church experience growing up, where it felt exclusive, it felt insider, it felt like you were around people that wanted a certain way, and maybe you were a kid, maybe you were a teenager, maybe you were a young adult, and you're like, hey, this feels right for me, and they're like, that doesn't feel comfortable for us, and so we don't really care about you, you can go find it somewhere else, or leave altogether. And some of us grew up in that, and you don't want that, and honestly, we don't want that as people that spend a lot of time thinking about how to set up churches and how to create churches that make an impact in our city. And Ogwee goes as far as to say, I don't think Jesus wanted that. I don't think that that's something that he called us to. I think he called us to something much, much bigger than that. And we get a little peek into this, and I think we have an agreement with Jesus as we look into the book of Acts, A-C-T-S, Acts. It's a book that happened right after the Gospels in the beginning of your New Testament. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are kind of the story of Jesus' life. The book of Acts is the story of how the church began. So Jesus had lived out his ministry. He had demonstrated his love for us. He demonstrated the character of God. He had been arrested, crucified, buried, risen again. And now he had spent about 40 days with his disciples, got them all back together again. And we're doing a little bit of a strategy session for what's going to happen from here, right? And so the book of Acts, in Acts chapter 1, the very beginning of the book of Acts, Jesus says this to his disciples. He says, but you will receive power, talking about what's going to happen next to the disciples, to the church, if you will. But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be witnesses. You'll be witnesses in Jerusalem and in Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. And this is in a moment that I don't know that we feel it when we read the book of Acts, but this is, I believe, what we were feeling. I feel like, you know, Jesus had come back from the dead. This was amazing. It's from the jaws of defeat. Here came victory. And the disciples all gathered around. And the disciples wanted a grand finale. Let's finish it. You know, you've come back. This is the perfect ending to our story, right? And Jesus said, actually, I'm not going to give you a grand finale. Actually, I'm going to give you a vision. And I'm going to give you a mission. And FYI, just so that we can have a little DTR right now, I don't know if Jesus did the hand motions or not, but he said, hey, just so you know, and it's going to be a little bit uncomfortable, but I want you to know, I don't have a finish line for you here. I have a beginning mark. I have a launch pad for your ministry. And he said, I have something that's going to send you out. And it was a vision for the church to not simply become a location, but it was a vision for the church to be a place where, yes, people gather, but also a place where people go out and live out some sort of mission or some sort of ministry in the people around them. That was the vision that Jesus started to unfold. Jesus pointed to a movement that had a message and was a mission, if you want to say it that way. Even as much as the disciples missed it, Jesus' message to the disciples was, I have a message for you to take out and to go places with. And I have a place for you. I want it to go locally, which would be Jerusalem to them. I want it to go regionally, which would be Judea. And I want it to go globally to the ends of the earth. There's not an end point for this message, but also too, it's not just the message that I want you to take out. I want you to take out the mission, and that is to be an image of me. I want it to be a taste of what it's like to follow me. I want you to image me in the world around you. That was Jesus's call in Acts 1 to these disciples. And they're like, okay, wow. We're going to go a completely different direction than we thought to. Jesus was casting a vision for the church to be more than simply a home. I think that was part of it, as it is for us today. Jesus said, hey, I want you to gather and I want you to find your people and find the family and have a home here. But he said, in the essence of what Acts 1 is, I want it to be, yes, a home, but more so, I want it to be a home base. I want church, this gathering for us, to be a home base for us. Instead of a place to just come and be, I wanted a place that you can become a home base where you can go out and you can, after you come here and you refuel and you get refreshed and you get re-inspired, but then you go out. Instead of simply being a gathering, if you will, I think it is more than just a gathering. I think it's a launch pad for what I'm going to call your personal ministry. I think this was Jesus' vision. Hey, yes, gather. This is going to be important. Lots of conversation about in the New Testament. But I want it to be a place that's a launch pad for your personal ministry and my personal ministry. And this is where you have every appropriate reason to say, my what? What do you mean my personal ministry? What are you talking about with my personal ministry? You guys are in ministry. I'm in sales, or I'm in marketing, or I'm in medical. You know, that's what you might say. But I believe you also, in addition to those things, have a personal ministry. When Jesus said, go and be witnesses, there was a personal side to this as much as there was a corporate side to this. Yes, we corporately are called to be a church that goes out and it is a witness to our city, in example and in word. But I think it also, too, you have it in the personal sense as well. It's a vision to get out there in the world, outside of these walls, into your neighborhoods and your workplaces and your campuses, and show and tell who Jesus is. That's baked into what Jesus calls us to be in Acts chapter 1. And so my key point is that as Jesus called his disciples to be people that showed and told who Jesus was, he said, I'm gonna tell you, you're also going to have an opportunity to do this. This will be part of the opportunity that you will. But by the way, I'm not just leaving you with an opportunity, I'm gonna leave you with the equipment as well. I wanna go back to Acts chapter 1. Because he said, I'm gonna go with you. Yes, he said, you're gonna go and be witnesses, but we shouldn't run by the fact that Jesus says, but you're gonna receive power through the Holy Spirit to do this, which sounds really out there, I get that. But Jesus says, hey, this is a partnership. I'm gonna go with you, I'm gonna give you strength and wisdom, I'm gonna give you the courage to do so, I'm gonna give you the words when you don't think you have it, I'm gonna give you the opportunities when you don't know where that's gonna be. To sum it all up, I would say it this way, that Jesus is giving us a couple of things. One is he's pointing us to a mission. And Jesus says, don't forget, don't come into these walls and think this is all what church is. There's a mission outside of these walls as well. Jesus is promising us to empower us, which was helpful. Jesus says, I'm gonna send my Holy Spirit to dwell in you and send you out. But also, I'm gonna provide a place like Decatur City Church to be your home base. This is the formula. This is the way that it all works. This is Jesus's call in Acts chapter 1 to the original disciples, and it's been Jesus's call ever since then. And so the question for us, individually and both collectively, is will we step into that? Is that what, will we slide, turn and feel the gravity of turning inward and being comfortable and just kind of making it happen here on Sundays and getting our check mark or doing the things that we do, or seeing this as an important launch pad for our personal ministry? Will we step into it? Will we define our relationship, if you will, with Jesus or with the church to be mission carriers to our city? Will we be people that see this as an extension of a very well-known passage? I see this as an extension of a passage that most of you, even if you don't know the Bible very well, an extension of something that Jesus said to us. And we see it in John chapter 3, John 3:16, right? John 3:16 is an incredible passage for us, and it has significant theological keystone for us. John 3:16, for God so loved the world, that he tells us this, and yes, the key passages and the key theological key parts of that are that Jesus died, Jesus came, Jesus died, Jesus gave made a way into heaven, we all have eternal life, but I think there's more than that. I think there is an extended extension of this, that for it's not just so God loved the world that he gave his only one and only son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. We know that, right? These are a bunch of key theological, they're theological keystones for us, right? And they're important. But I think what's understated in this and the extension of this actually is that God loved our world so much that he also went as far as to make a plan on how to reach it. He made a way. He made an image of himself, but he also said, I'm gonna also continue on to make a plan for how to reach it. And I believe you and I are a key piece of that plan. For God so loved our world that he had a plan to reach it, and for God so loved the world that he sends you. So when you join that thought with Acts 1, you get this, for God so loved our city, they put you here as a gift to it. I think that's safe to say. We don't replace Jesus. We're the next chapters that come after him. Is that for God so loved the world that he placed you in our city to be a key strategy to reach it. For God so loved Decatur that he put you here so that you might be a person that takes hope and takes help onto our city. For God so loved Oak Grove and for God so loved, Avondale Estates and For God Love So Loved Inman Park and Grant Park and DeKalb County and Tucker, that he has you here so that you might come and be refreshed and refueled, but go back out into the real city and see people. And when you see people struggling, you could be that light in their world. And he believes that, and he asks us to be those people. I think For God So Loved the places that you work, For God So Loved the CDC, For God So Loved Emory, For God So Loved Agnes Scott, For God So Loved your realty office, For God So Loved your law office, For God So Loved your grocery store, and the people in it, that he's sending you there so that you might be a light, especially when people struggle. I think For God So Loved the people that sit in the bleachers with you on when you watch games, or the people that you stand in front of or behind at Whole Foods, or the people that you sit down next to at the two tables over at Spiller Park Coffee. For God so loved them that he has you in their world, and he has you brushing up against them, sometimes in very cursory ways, sometimes every day you see people. And God says, I believe that you can make a difference in your life. And for I so love this world that I have you in it. And I pray that you'll meet people and that you'll be bold enough to maybe invite them into a conversation or invite them here. I think God is strategically, and I don't think this is accidental, I think God has strategically placed you where you work. I think God has strategically placed you in your neighborhood. I think God has strategically placed you at your school or on your campus. And he knows you're there, and he has an opportunity in front of you, but also to the empowerment in you as well. And why? Because the church isn't just a place that we gather. It's a people who carry life and hope out into our community. And I think For God So Loved our neighborhoods that he has a plan for you in it. But it's easy and important, I think, in some ways to ask the question, okay, I get all that, that's really inspiring, but how? How do I do that, you know? And if you're like me, the better question is, yeah, but how do I do that without being weird, right? That's a valid question. I mean, you want me to go down and hand out tracts in the middle of Decatur Square? You know, you want me to bust into like Victory Sandwich Bar and be like, hey, attention everyone, let me tell you who my victory is in, right? Could I have your attention? Can we stand and sing Victory in Jesus together at the Victory Sandwich Bar? No, because I don't know that that works, right? So I think it's a valid question to say, yeah, I get this. And even if God so loved my community that he wants to send me into it, and the mission for this is to be a launch pad for us out there, how do we do this without being weird? I want to give you three suggestions real quickly. And the first one, it seems like it's not necessarily a tangible suggestion, but I think it matters. And it's this. And the first and foremost, it's to live a life that makes people curious. This is one of the most powerful, if I can use a churchy word, one of the most powerful modes of evangelism is to live a life that makes people curious. And what I mean by that is that you live a life that makes others wonder, why are you the way that you are? When you go sell out and go, I'm gonna follow Jesus as best I can, eventually somebody would say, why are you the way that you are? Why do you have, in this season of life or in the community, the culture that we're in, why do you have peace where everybody else is freaking out? You know? Why are you so positive when I'm surrounded by negative people? Why is that? Why do you use your time the way you do? Why, when everybody else is running crazy, so busy, why do you have time for people? Why do you look like you're not so hurried and harried all the time? Why do you use your time or your money the way that you do? Why are your relationships so healthy? You know, tell me, why are you so hopeful? Where does your hope come from? Eventually, when you live a life this way, people at some point are gonna get curious about it. And when people ask, why are you the way that you are? It's a very natural thing to do to answer that question. To say, well, if you really want to know the answer, I'm hopeful, or I prioritize this way, or I live my life this way, or my relationships are this way, or we work hard on this because I follow Jesus. And this is how Jesus calls us to be better in life and to be better at life and to make life better. They ask the question and you answer. But it starts with living a life that's worthy of interest. And living a life that's worthy in interest, but also too, being ready when people ask you. Because that can be, you can catch you off guard sometimes, or you can miss it sometimes. You're like, why are you the way? Why are you so hopeful? And, you know, it's really easy to cop out and go like, well, I'm just cutting down on gluten and it seems to be working, you know, those kind of things. But more importantly, to be able to know that those opportunities come and say, why are you the way that you are? Peter, who wrote 1 Peter, said it this way. Peter said, I want you to be ready. He said, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you for the reason to ask you to give the reason for the hope that you have. Always be ready to answer that. When people ask you, why do you have hope? Well, both now and eternally, why do you have hope? Peter says, always be ready because someone's going to ask you at some point. And I love that he goes on. He says, but do this with gentleness and respect, which is my interpretation of that is Peter saying, and by the way, don't be weird about it. You know who they are, know where they're coming from, ask good questions and know what their life, be gentle with them, but also to respect where they're coming from. But expect that if you follow Jesus, people are going to ask you why the way that you are. So the simple formula is you live a unique life. You live a life that you work hard to follow Jesus as an overflow of that. Pray for opportunities to be those kind of people that say, God, just give me an opportunity that maybe somebody might ask me why of the hope that I have or why we live the way that I do, not to get credit. So just that I can be able to be ready for that. But also to be yourself, be who you are, be in the places that you are, use the words that you have, be honest to who you are. But also to watch for God to work in that. Because you'll be surprised how much he does. I think the second way to have a personal ministry in this, and then it's these two words that I'll explain, is to lean in. And what I mean by leaning in is leaning in means to seeking to be used in somebody else's life. When I lean in, I'm going to seek to be used. I'm going to walk out my door every morning expecting and wanting to be used in somebody else's life. Remember going, hey, for God so loved Decatur, for God so loved Grand Park, for God so loved Avenel Estates, for God so loved wherever I am, my workplace, my neighborhood, my family, that God sent me. So I need to be ready and open and willing and in some ways have some sort of strategy to be able to do this. And I'm gonna give you three sentences to be able to do this well, what it means to lean in, okay? Two of these are questions, and one of these is a statement. They're all, if you use them powerfully, if you use them boldly, if you use them often, then you're gonna have a personal ministry and it's gonna help you lean in. The first one is this, just simply asking people, hey, how's it going? And not really just like embezzling, how's it going? It's really literally asking people, hey, how are you doing? How is it going? And if you need to amp it up a little bit, you can add a fourth or a fifth word. How's it going really? How's life going really? You would be surprised what people will say to you. And if they sense that you really, truly want to know what's going on in their life, you'll be surprised what lies under the surface of most people's lives. And when you do that, you suddenly have an opportunity to have a personal ministry. You certainly have an opportunity in all of your ways that are as imperfect as mine are some days. When you say, how's life going, or how's life going really, you suddenly have the opportunity to ask the next question. And that is, how can I help? To walk to this world and to be somebody that says, how can I help? Do you need somebody to talk to? Do you need somebody to help you with that project? Do you need somebody that can be a sounding board for you? Hey, I'm happy to help. Do you need a distraction? You know, how can I help? And to truly mean it and to truly have saved some time in your life and to truly have organized your life in order to do so, it's crazy how alone people feel in this world. It's crazy how when people get in hard spots or get into storms or dark seasons that they feel so alone. And for to have somebody come up to them and say, hey, can I help? Honestly, it's a breath of fresh air for them. And it gives you a personal ministry, but also too, it leads you to a point where don't be surprised if somebody says, hey, can I ask you a question as you're helping me? Why do you care? Why do you care? And then you can tell them why you care, because you truly do. And you're like, yes, it's because Jesus calls me to care, but I really truly care. This is why I feel like I'm here. The third one is not a question, but it's a sentence, a statement. And it's the statement to come sit with me. Now, come sit with me at Decatur City Church isn't about kingdom building. When we stand on the stage, I encourage you guys to invite people here to come sit with you. This feels a lot like, hey, we're just trying to grow a big church and it feels like an ego boost and all these kind of things. This isn't about empire building at all. This is about Decatur City's ability to partner with you in your personal ministry. Those of you that invite people here understand this. That's really our desire, is to be a partner for you in your personal ministry. But it's also, too, to introduce people that are wandering around this world discouraged and looking for answers to a home base that also can be a sense of community and inspiration and growth and service, just like it is for a lot of you. So that's what Come Sit With Me is all about. And we want them to find something just like you found as well. And I get it. It feels scary to invite somebody. Hey, come check out Decatur City Church. Come sit with me. You know, let's talk about these things. It feels difficult and it feels risky some days, doesn't it? You don't want to offend somebody or for somebody to react awkwardly if you were to invite them. Hey, come, we love our church, Decatur, so you should come check it out. But I just want to consider this real quickly. The first thing is that how many times in your life have you been truly offended when somebody invited you to check out something that you love? Very seldom, you know? How many times have you been like, how dare you tell me about this new Italian restaurant that you love? That offends me on multiple levels. Of course not, right? How many of you have said, how dare you tell me about that movie or that streaming show that you love? No, not at all. You know, you might not do it, but you're also at the base of that, the foundation of that, you're like, oh, they have something they love and they're giving it to me because they love me. And they're like, maybe you'll love that too. That's exactly the same way as church. Same way Decatur City is, you know? Even if it doesn't work, even if they don't come, they're going to appreciate that you care for them. And they're going to appreciate that wow, they're onto something and they're just like, hey, come aboard if you want to. The other one is this, and this is unique. I want you to think back to the very first time that you came to a North Point church, okay? To one of our churches. A lot of you guys didn't start here, so whether it be Buckhead Church, North Point Church, whatever. The first time you ever came to one of them, I would love for you to, this participatory, raise your hand if you came because someone invited you or someone told you you should come. Raise your hand. Raise those up. Raise them up high, really high. Keep them up. I want you to look around. These are all people that are here today, thank you, that because someone stepped over that and said, hey, why don't you come check it out? They're all, somebody took a little bit of a bold risk and said, why don't you come check it out with me? And you can imagine the stories of the impact of every one of those people these days that are like, I'm so grateful that person invited me. And they might not have been in a hard season. They're like, somebody just was bold enough to say, hey, we like it. You should come check it out. We do surveys from time to time about why people do or do not come to church. And one of the questions that we love to ask is when you could attend church, meaning that there's not something, a huge obstacle like you're out of town or whatever, when you could attend church but you don't, why don't you? The number one is busyness, of course, right? The second one, and this is always surprising, and it's always consistent. The reason that someone could come to church but decided not to is because we don't know anybody and we don't want to go alone. It's very powerful. It shows up in very powerful ways if it's a single person, but it shows up for couples as well. They're like, you have each other. No, we don't want to walk in as a couple and not know anyone. It's the second primary reason why people don't attend a church. It's because someone doesn't say, come stay with me. The last one that I want to mention, and then we'll be done. And this one seems a little bit superficial, but I can't not talk about it. The third way that you can have a personal ministry is to rep the brand. And what I mean by this, and this is going to feel self-seeking if you let it, is it sounds silly, but I truly believe in it. I love when people ask, what does that little Decatur City logo mean? We've designed our Decatur City logo, so it's a little bit mysterious, but I love when people ask, what's that logo all about? Because it gives people the opportunity to answer the question. I've seen that Decatur City logo, the little logo, whether it be a car, a sticker, magnet on the back of a car, or a window sticker, or on a water bottle, or something else. I've seen it lead to change, to life change. I've seen that when put on something and when you regularly rep that logo, that God uses it. And it's interesting how it works. And people ask about it all the time. What is that logo? And this is why we make them, honestly. There's a lot of, some of you know the Nelson, the family of the Nelsons here, Jennifer Nelson. When I met Jennifer, I ask a lot of you guys when I meet you for the first time, like, hey, how'd you get to Decatur City Church? This is what Jennifer said to me. And I verified this quote this week. She said this: I kept seeing the logo on cars and wondered what it represented. I did a web search for it, and she doesn't even remember what she Googled, like yellow logo, mysterious Decatur. I don't know what she even Googled. She doesn't even remember. She said, I did a web search for it and found Decatur City Church in a season when I and our family really needed it. And we've been here ever since. The Nelson family's here because of a logo that somebody repped the brand and put it on their car. Our church is, our city is full of people that are looking for something and looking for something more. And with some intentionality, I believe, and some prayer, something as simple or as small as a little logo on a water bottle or on the back of your car might be an avenue that can change their life. So the reason that as you leave today, our guest services teams are going to be there with little packets that have a car magnet on it. It's got some stickers in it. And take as many of those as you want. We'll make more, right? But honestly, this is a spiritual exercise in some ways. Take as many as you want, because I really truly believe that when you put it somewhere, I would love for you to do one thing, is to pray for it and to say, God, may this simple little logo, this little sticker, and on my water bottle at the gym or on the back of my laptop or on my car or somewhere on your day planner, when somebody says, what's that little logo about? May it give me an opportunity to have a partner with them and to say, how are you doing? Or what's up in life? Or, hey, you should come check out our church, because I believe that God can do it. Because I love when people say, it's my church, come sit with me. And if you put it on your car, you guys got to drive well if you put it on your car, okay? Because we're repping the brand in terrible traffic, you know. But here's the bottom line, you guys, and then I'm done. Here's the bottom line. The church isn't meant to be a cul-de-sac for our comfort. It's just not. Jesus didn't design it that way. The church isn't meant to be a cul-de-sac for our comfort. It's meant to be a launch pad for your personal ministry. It's why we exist. We're gonna continue to do great work here. You know, we're gonna create Decatur City as a home base for you. That is our prayer. We work really hard to do that. A place that you can refresh, and a place that you can equip, and a place that you can also to go back into our city. I love, 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 and our team loves creating Sunday mornings here and creating opportunities for you guys to have community groups. We love that. But I'll tell you what, we get super excited every Sunday watching you walk out of these doors. Not because you're leaving here, it's because what you're going into. And knowing that you're a group of people that's headed out into the world. We get so excited knowing that all of you are headed out to the world and interact with other people and are gonna go do great things in our city. Can you imagine what happens if we all truly step into this and get intentional about going, God, I want to pray for this, but also too want to see what you're going to do. Imagine what a Decatur City Church sized wave of help and wisdom and service looks like walking out into our community every week. We truly can change a community. We truly can change a city, especially when we have, as promised, Jesus has promised us the wisdom and the power and the boldness to do so as well. Imagine that impact. You know, imagine how fun that would be to live life that way. To wake up every day going like, God has something for me today. He's gonna have a conversation, or he's gonna have an interaction, or I'm gonna cross paths with, he's got something for me today. Imagine how exciting that might be. Imagine how many lives could be changed because you were bold enough to step into it. I think for God so loved our city that he put you here, I don't think it's an accident. I think for God so loved our city that he has an opportunity for us. And my prayer is that we'll step into it. Let me pray for us and we'll be done. God, thanks for Jesus that he gives us a reason. He gives us a message today. And thanks that you've called us into a mission to reach our city. God, I pray that we can live lives that make people curious about Jesus first and foremost. I pray that we can find the boldness to ask good questions and to give invitations. God, I pray that Decatur City Church can be a great home base as a church that gathers, but then it goes out these doors. Father, I pray that you can wake us up each day and inspire us to pray for opportunities that, and then trust that and watch what you're going to do with those. Father, help us to be more intentional in our lives and to be people that fall in love with being a helpful light to our community. Father, help us to be an integral ingredient in your plan to love our city. And God, help us to always know that because you loved us and because you love our city, you're sending us out. Thanks for loving us. Help us to follow your way so that we might lead others in that way as well. We pray all these things in the name of Jesus. Amen.